Well, thank you, Spence, and what a great job you've done with all of this, the whole trade show. It's just amazing. It's really great job. You all know our keynote speaker and how he started out as a deckhand, kind of like Frank there, and then a captain on his family's boats on the Illinois River, and went on to become the president and CEO of one of the largest barge and towing companies in our industry. You all know how along the way he held and holds leadership positions in just about every organization that serves the river, and even some that don't, like the Boy Scouts. And you all know how he furthers the industry's causes in Congress and elsewhere at every turn. You all know this. So what I'd like to do is tell you a short story about him that you probably don't know, that illustrates what kind of leader he is. it's clean. Shortly after Hurricane Katrina roared up the Mississippi River to New Orleans, our speaker, then president of AEP River Operations, invited me and several others to join him on a trip to survey the damage. We flew to Houma and boarded a helicopter that took us to a spot on the river where numerous of his company's barges and boats had been strewn all over the levee. Some of us convened in the pilot house of a stranded towboat being used as the crisis center, and after a short time, we saw a familiar figure out amongst the barges. Lo and behold, it was none other than the company's highest-ranking officer. In the triple-digit heat and muck, with his shirt sleeves rolled up, helping a deckhand start a 3-inch pump to get the water out of one of the barge's compartments. That's our leader. Please welcome Mark Canoy.
Thanks for that kind introduction. I was sitting between George and Goat there, and there's no telling what kind of story could have came up from a fishing trip out in Montana or something. This is one of those things you promised to do about a year ago, and the day has come. Happy to be here. Thanks to Nelson and Spence for inviting me. It is Maritime Day, so I thought maybe change our talk just a little bit today and talk about the opportunities for people in the marine industry, which was the original thing they asked me to talk about. And I thought, geez, we'd be sitting here amongst all the people that are already here. What can I tell you about opportunities in the marine industry? But let's give it a go and see what happens. See if we get this going here. This was the start of my career. I am a product of the industry. This is my dad aboard the Chicago Trader at Starve Rock Lock and Dam in 1966. I was 7 years old then and got on the boat and took my first trip. We grew up about 4 miles from Starve Rock Lock and Dam, and I just fell in love with the river industry, and that's really all I ever wanted to do. So like a fool, instead of going to college, I went off and got my pilot's license on my 19th birthday and thought I could do exactly what my dad did. He made it look so easy. Truth be told, I wasn't very good at that, so I went into management. But I really do think the opportunities exist today in the industry for everyone, those with formal educations and those working on the deck. The opportunities just within the industry are just hard to explain. They just come from every direction. They're all over. I am a strong advocate for the industry and for the mariner, and enjoy a lot of my work with SCI and David Ryder's team and their ministry on the river, and more recently with the U.S. Coast Guard Foundation, trying to give back a little bit. So let me share with you what I think this industry is a great place to start and maintain a career. This first slide is pretty much, you've all seen these things. I just wanted to comment on a couple of them. You know who we are. You know about the industry. One of the stats I always see on the industry slides is the 17,000 miles of navigable waterways. I asked somebody to tell me where those miles were. I didn't get a very good answer, so I just sat down and started adding up the numbers. I came up with about 8,000 where we really work, and what I'd like to advocate for is a much more robust and efficient system over 8,000 miles instead of all the other miles that might exist. There is a good number of jobs in the industry. There's about 33,000 mariners, another 35,000 kind of direct support jobs, and almost another 300,000 induced and indirect jobs that support our industry. So it's really a key driver in the commerce, the transportation, the building blocks of our nation. I thought I might talk today about these four things: continued carrier consolidation, which is good and bad, but I think for the most part a good thing. A few technology advances. I'm not going to get very deep into that. I'm not a tech guy, but there's a lot of people in the room here that are, and hopefully you'll take some of those ideas and thoughts and bring them into reality for us. Supply and demand equilibrium, that's something that we're all shooting for on a constant basis. For whatever reason, one of the things in my long career here in the river industry is why we can't stand prosperity, but we'll try to figure that out in the future. And then maybe who the winners and the losers might be in the industry over the next few years. So why is there so much consolidation? Well, I have my thoughts, and let me tell you, these are all my thoughts. They're not actually even ACBL's thoughts, but they're certainly my thoughts. I did not get this approved by our general counsel. But, you know, there's been 81 consolidations in the industry as far back as we've kind of kept those kind of records, and I'm referring to some of the records that Ken Erickson shares with us, and in the old Sparks report, now the Informa Barge report, and Sander Toth, and a handful of other people. But I think it's driven by a handful of things. It's a very highly competitive marketplace, as I just stated about the prosperity. You know, we often lose business over just 2 bits a ton moving up and down the river. We have very strong competition. Although we don't really compete with truck and rail, it's a little bit of a misnomer. We need truck and rail to make our industry work. So that's really not who we're competing against. We're competing against each other. So I think one of the things is certainly cost. Cost is a big issue when you have low margins. So there's a lot of efficiencies of scale. Also, we can offer a very robust access across all the end markets and geography. Customers can come to us today, and my peers here, Dave and Ingram and a few others, and we can do just about anything it is that they want to do. And it takes a lot today to absorb. I'm going to have a slide up here in a little bit about all the regulatory compliance issues that we have to deal with today. And if you happen to be in the tank barge business, there's a whole list of non-regulatory compliance things that you have to deal with as well. There's just a lot of sets of rules. Just, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago, we had one person in the compliance department. Today we spend $7 million. We got 7 people. And I think while we're leading the industry in that regard, it's hard to recover those dollars, especially if you don't think it's bringing you a lot of value. Am I going to disconnect here? Sorry about that. Wanted to try to see a few more of you here. And then there's also the issue of just generation passing. You know, a lot of our industries are family, or a lot of our companies in the industry are family-owned, and this isn't for everybody. If I'd have only known it was going to be 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, maybe I would have went to college. But who benefits from all this consolidation? I really think everybody does. Jobs aren't going to go away. They'll just be fewer employers. But those opportunities are always going to be there. I think the shippers will still get very robust capabilities, you know, being able to load shipload quantities, go all over the country, do about whatever you want to do, just be less people to call. And then just getting the work done. You know, we haven't taken a 40-barge tow down the lower Mississippi in 6 months or better. And I think sometimes we're really faced with a challenge getting things done. And if you're not vertically integrated and you're of any size at all, it's just hard to get it done. But I look around the room here. We have a lot of great partners, vendors, suppliers, even some customers that help us get it done. Without you, we wouldn't be able to do it. But when times get tough like this, like they have been for the last 6 months, you've got to be able to control your own destiny. The one thing that it does, I think the negative impact, it also creates some leadership vacuums in our industry. All the consolidation, it used to be you'd go to a meeting and there'd be twice as many people as what we see here, but there'd also be twice as many leaders. And I would ask you to think about what you can do, especially the 40 under 40 that are coming up. What can you do to help lead things in our industry? We have a leadership vacuum. we really struggle to fill the roles that need to be filled to be able to partner with the Coast Guard and to be able to partner with the Corps of Engineers. And Frank shouldn't have had to been chairman 6 out of 9 years. If it wasn't for Frank, who would have been there? And so I would ask you to, you know, get involved, volunteer for something. That's the way I learned how to do things and get things done is just step into that, take a whack at it. Let's talk a little bit about the fleet. I'm sure you heard a lot about that. I'm not the expert on the fleet. I just wanted to make a couple points. As I said, this is just part of that consolidation. Ken Erickson could talk to you ad nauseum about all the details under the hood. But for the most part, the fleet's been the same overall size for about 20 years. And the only thing that we've really seen reinvestment in because of the competitiveness in our industry and the cyclicalness of it is when the energy renaissance cranked up back in the earlier part of this decade, maybe around 2011, 2012, we started to renew the tank barge fleet. So you can see that's the only thing that's really changed in this chart is that we have invested quite a bit and renewed the tank barge fleet. So while there may be less carriers, again, I think there's going to continue to be a lot of jobs. Technology is something that I like. I wish I had a lot more time. If I was to start over, this is an area where I think I'd put a little bit more focus, and I wish I could today, but I am happy to see a lot of you in here, a lot of you exhibitors today, because I think you can help us take my dreams, if you will, and make them into reality. Not just my dreams, they're everybody's. I think technology, one of the most difficult things that we have in our industry, as Frank mentioned, being away from home a month at a time, a lot of the communication advances that we've made in the industry, it hasn't taken away those loved ones that you miss while you're gone, but it's certainly brought them a lot closer. And I remember starting back and climbing up the lock wall only to find out that somebody had destroyed the payphone, it didn't work anymore, and you weren't going to get to call home for at least another week or two. Remember those days? So let's just talk about that a little bit. I've got a couple slides here. Let's start with navigation. There's a couple vessel operation things I'd like to share, and then the communication. But again, I'm not the expert on this. I just have some thoughts on it. I use the term autopilot. I've since been corrected. That's auto assist is what I've told. I think if we had a little better market over the last 3 or 4 years, we would have made some investment in some of these ideas, and we'd be a lot better off than what we are. But that is really kind of the most significant advancement that I think that we've looking at before us is a pilot assist application that I think would offer a lot of things, keeping our boats on selected courses in spite of all those strong currents and winds. It improve efficiency significantly by going in a straighter line and, you know, keeping the wheel wash coming straight out. A lot more convenience knowing where you are and passing situations, etc. Of course, a lot of fuel savings and safety, and we really need to invest in this technology. There is really autopilot out there in the blue water industry, and that technology is just waiting to come to our industry. We just need the opportunity to invest, and we need to bring down the cost of those investments to some degree as well. A couple years ago, we did a test with a remote-controlled bow thruster on the head of a tow with one of our 6,000s, and we were able to take 40 barges down the river. It's just an example of things that can be done with the technology. Unfortunately, it was so expensive, we could do it better just with one big boat taking the 40 barges down the river. But those kind of things are coming. One of the things that I'm really interested in is the whole drone aspect, and I just want to give you one shot of this. I told my children I was excited about drones, so they each bought me one. I still haven't got them out of the boxes yet. I wish I could. But I know this stuff can happen, and I know it is happening, and I just think we need to figure out how to apply it to our business more. So today at our company, we use drones to help with our training. I just want to take a look at this. This is from the pilot house, and take a look at the view that you get of the bridge just coming down on Vicksburg. A lot of you are familiar with that. But look at the view from the pilot house, and in just a couple seconds here, that's kind of scary in itself, isn't it, Frank? But it always seems, well, not always. Most of the time it goes through there, doesn't it? But now look, and we're just as guilty of that as anybody. But now look, if you had a drone tethered to the boat and you were 100 feet in the air and 100 feet behind it. Now look at the perspective that you have on that bridge. And I know that that technology exists. We just need to bring it to our industry. Imagine having a drone tethered to the head of your toe when you're going through a close bridge or through a lock and dam. And we all know that mates do the best they can, but oftentimes their depth perception isn't quite as good as we'd like it to be. Rose Point is at least in our folks' estimation, is probably the best investment that we've made in our industry in technology in a long time. It greatly enhances navigation safety, improves operational efficiency, improves situational awareness and overall safety of our vessel operations. It's reduced our cost of operation for more efficient transit times. It records a lot of voyage data, which enhances our incident review capabilities, good lessons learned, and it's extremely well-tested and very reliable. I just want to show you a little bit. I apologize for this. It doesn't come up quite as well, but you know, we have people using Rose Point today to navigate from, period. I'm not dissing this. I think if I was a young man, I'd be doing it myself. But we see a lot of two-piece unit tows come out of the Gulf, come up river, and as long as they stay on that sailing light on this chart, they're coming at you. But it is a great tool. It's probably the best one that we have today. I remember as a young pilot trying to figure out what the heck was on that radar, but this is just like a TV screen. It's just right in front of you. It has the swing turn indicator. It'll even tell you, maybe it's not going, but even tell you, here's a meeting situation. It'll tell you where you need to go to stay out of harm's way, and it'll tell you how to get back on the path when you're done. And we just need to continue to enhance that ability. And here's one that I'll probably get in a little bit of trouble from some of my peers in the industry, or certainly some of the riverboat captains, is I think you got to match up this Rose Point technology with electronic buoys and just get over the fact that we can no longer afford to have physical buoys all up and down these 8,000 miles of waterways. We need to spend that money on something that'll bring a better return. I think we'll always need to have buoys in certain areas. Everybody in here that runs a boat, Frank, you probably got a list of ones that we have to have, and I don't disagree with that, but we could sure save a lot of money, and we're just getting ready to enter into a program to build all new buoy tenders at $25 million a copy. I just wonder if we can't put that money to better work. I'd rather have a more reliable lock than I would maybe a buoy. When we get into vessel operations, I really lose the technical aspect of this pretty quickly, and I'm so happy to have Keith Lay on board. He's actually a rocket scientist, if you don't know him. He's got a degree in thermohydro something or other. So I really rely on him, but this is a big issue for our industry, and I know there's some of you out here. It's amazing how many Tier 3 engines showed up at the end of last year and how many boats are getting built. But eventually they're going to go away. I don't know when, but I would guess we're just about to the end of that. And mixing this technology up with a urea slurry and just asking us to do so much more, I really don't think we're the problem. I would lobby for let's all carpool 10% of the time, and it would take care of the emission issue. But we're going to have to continue to invest in that. I'm a lot more excited about some of the new propulsion concepts. We've built 20 of these Z-Drive tugs. Well, I shouldn't call them tugs. Many of them are working on two-piece unit tows. I think Marquette runs some on the upper river with 9 and 12 barge tows. A 2,000-horsepower boat with Z-Drive is a pretty amazing vessel for our industry, and hopefully we'll continue to improve on those. Certainly some new stuff coming along. Dave is sitting here with ABB and the whole diesel electric and some hybrids from that. And these articulating rudders, just amazing. At least I never experienced that, but the guys on the boats just tell us we're amazing. We need some new technology to come our way. Here's one here. I do remember this because on my way up, I worked in the engine room a couple years. I thought that was the best job on the boat. You know, you just go down the engine room and nobody comes down there. It's too damn hot. They just leave you alone. But I remember, you know, if you could ever figure out what the hell was wrong with it, you could fix it. But troubleshooting was the hardest thing there was to do. And, of course, we had every part on the boat we needed except for that one. Well, now we have these engines talking to us constantly through new systems, through preventative and predictive maintenance systems. and happy to say today that long before boat breaks down, we know it's going to. When these big boats break down on the lower Mississippi River today, it cost us $100,000 just to go rescue that boat. We got to take a big boat out of service, lose all of that revenue, go get that boat, bring it in, and you still got 40 barges stranded somewhere. So having this technology that talks to us is a huge improvement, and we just got to see the price of some of this come down. These vibration sensors on the front of engines, they can tell you when a crankshaft's going to fail, but they cost $30,000 a piece. Now, that's a pretty good investment if you're rolling in the dough and times are good, but in the times that we've seen in our industry over the last 4 or 5 years, it's hard to make that investment. But as those technologies come down, I'm pretty sure that we'll see an improvement there. This is the part that I like probably the most, just as I advocate for mariners, is just the whole improvement in communication. You know, we used to ask people to do a lot of stuff at home while they're off the boat. We got to do this training. You know, now we do all of this training on the boat. We do advancement training, just, you know, our normal regulatory training. All of this stuff is streaming live. The folks that work on the boat for us, the play time's a whole lot better. They can stream, you know, local media. They can touch base. They can FaceTime. Video calls. Just imagine if we had that back in the old days. And the next thing we'll have is we'll just bring them on board like we did with Star Trek. That would help a little bit. I don't know how long time I have here. I didn't want to go over. Just got a couple more points I wanted to make. Just a little bit about the supply and demand equilibrium. What drives it? What's going on there? And I think this is all a good news story, so don't get me wrong. I think these are all good things that are going to happen in our industry as all of our end markets, beginning with the energy renaissance a few years ago and the redistribution of all the crude oil deliveries and the post-pipeline construction and reversals. The cheap natural gas is changing electric generation and plastics manufacturing markets. We're seeing more onshoring of manufacturing jobs in the plastic industry, more tons of chemicals moving upriver. Coal tonnage is on the flip side of that. We've lost 80, 85 million tons. I think for the most part, we have adjusted to that. We've seen some product production of products move. I got a little illustration here I'll share with you where we used to see a lot more ton miles move as we've kind of centralized the demand for or the production of those commodities. It's reduced our total ton miles. But there's also a big key driver, and that's in barge construction. And I just think too often we see opportunities where we have investors building barges for the wrong reasons, and that's the accelerated depreciation. And, you know, if you want to invest $1 million in hard assets today in our industry, you immediately get a $900,000 tax benefit, and what really goes in your wallet's $350,000. It's a hell of a deal. The only problem is that barge lasts 25 or 30 years. So the quick gain has a long pain left behind it, and that highlighted is where you see where we've seen the accelerated depreciation, I think, especially in the dry cargo side on covered barges where we see a lot of, you know, they're a little more fungible, generic product, if you will, where we've seen a lot of investors build that. And you can see that the supply on the left side of this chart, or the left chart, you can see where the supply has really overgrown the demand excessively. The other thing I talked about in supply and demand is the distribution of the products themselves. Used to be, there's three charts here for the cement industry, steel industry, and the fertilizer industry. The old delivery of cement was it came in through the center Gulf, and we hauled it 1,000 or 1,500 miles to its destination, and then Holcim came in and built this huge facility in St. Genevieve, and now we get about half the ton miles that we used to. All the steel mills in our countries used to be integrated steel mills where we would bring the raw materials in, again, generally from the Gulf where natural gas was, you know, cheaper in foreign lands, and we would bring the pig iron and DRI, HBI. Now that's what we bring. We used to bring more of the ores. And now with the new electric arc furnaces, they're fed a lot by scrap, and it comes from all over. Again, it's kind of a centralized function. Lost a lot of ton miles there. And this is the latest coming on from the demand side is all these little red dots represent all the new fertilizer plants that are coming online upstream, where, again, we used to bring that in at the Center Gulf. So we're struggling a little bit with some of that, but I think overall we've become able to adjust to that. If we can adjust to the huge swings in the coal market, you know, as Nelson said, or one of them in my introduction, I worked at AEP, and I got a little bit involved on the corporate side with the fuel emissions and logistics group. And this is probably, I don't know, 12, 15 years ago, they were deciding what to do about emissions coming out of these plants, and they essentially built these huge scrubbers that cost more than the original coal plant did to begin with, because gas was going to be $13 forever. Now it's less than $3 and all of that investment. And so as they're investing in the plants, we're investing in the coal fleet, and our timing hasn't always been well because these assets last so long. So as David painfully is aware, we've went through a significant change in the coal market, which has had a big impact on many of us. But we are getting right-sized again. So just closing out, you know, who are the winners and the losers going forward? I think the maritime industry is going to be a winner, and here's why. You know, we are the most, you've seen these slides with, can you advance that one for me? Oh, did it? Oh, it went fast, didn't it? Holy cow. All right. Well, barges generally don't move that fast, let me tell you. Sorry. I just want to go to that next slide. However, you can help me do that. All right. Is it going? Doesn't look like it's moving. All right. Who's doing that? All right. Well, look, I don't know what the heck's going on here. Let me just tell you what I... Oh, jeez. Well, this is a little ahead of the game. These are the challenges. Let's go with the slide that's up there. What the hell? So these are really the care. You know, this is the negative side of the business. So I don't want to harp on this too bad, because I think our industry is a really positive story. But as you see these pop up here, these are all the regulatory issues that we're facing today. And I'd love to understand how most of those are putting money in our pocket, because I have a hard time with just about, well, the vast majority of all of those up there. The first slide would have just talked about why our industry is going to survive. It's because it's, you know, there's just so many things that our industry can do that nobody else can. So if you see a power plant along the Ohio River, we're taking the equivalent of 1,000 truckloads of coal a day into that power plant. There's no way a community could live around a power plant if you had 1,000 truckloads a day. We service one of the newest, most efficient steel mills in the country down at Calvert, Alabama. We move 500,000 tons a month in and out of that plant. Coils that weigh 40 tons, slabs that weigh 40 tons, things that can't even move on the highway. If you did that by truck, there'd be 800 trucks a day going through that community, 7 days a week. I just don't think that community would put up with that. So our industry knows how to deliver goods. They know how to deliver them cheaply, safely, and not interfere with the public. And I think that's a big advancement that we offer. Kind of got this regulatory slide. I got like 8 slides on Sub M. That's how much I like that. But I'm going to skip all of those. I think you've heard about that all you can. This is the last thing, and I'm not really harping on it. Might come out that way, but in the inland waterways industry, we are the only ones paying a user fee. We pay about $115 million a year to use the waterways. Most of us are taxpayers as well. And then individually, we're taxpayers too. So I kind of feel like I'm paying tax 3 times to use a waterway that nobody else is paying any tax on at all. And so one thing we do need to do is figure out how to keep a good, efficient system going, a reliable system going. And one way to do it is to get all the beneficiaries of it to pay to use it. And that's something that we're advocating for with the Waterways Council now, to change the cost share permanently on all facilities going forward to 75% treasury and 25% users. And we think that'll bring a much better balance to the overall beneficiaries of the system. You know, when we pay for 50% of all the new construction and major rehabilitation on locks, we also pay it on dams. And we haven't even really started on the dam work yet. And that's going to be a killer. There's no way we'll ever come up with enough money to take care of the dams. But when the Armada going to the Tennessee game goes through the locks on the upper Tennessee, those locks take the same wear and tear as if a commercial towboat went through there. And sometimes there's just two yachts in the chamber, and again, they take the same wear and tear. They don't scuff up the concrete quite as bad, but the mechanisms around the gates and the fill and the dumping valves are all the same. So all we want is a fair shake here, and let some of the other beneficiaries pay for it as well. And then in closing here, you know, the environment, the public, they're always the big winners. You know, we drive a lot of GDP. I mentioned over 300,000 jobs, the taxes that we pay. I just think we're always going to be a winner in that environment. And then lastly, as you all know, you've seen a bunch of these slides with environment. You know, that's why our industry is going to always be around and always offer opportunity to the mariner and those that support him. With that, I'll close and be happy to take any questions or comments. And thank you for having me here today. You want to do some Q&A or? Yeah, if you got a question. Oh, you got a question?
No.
Oh, good, yeah. Good. Good. Well, I hope I explained myself well, and then there isn't any questions, right?
We have time for stories, too.
Oh, no, we're good with that. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it. It's like old home week here. I've seen a lot of you here. Great to have you.